It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
He is a former Trump-Pence EPA transition team member, founder of JunkScience.com, and senior legal fellow at the Energy and Environment Legal Institute. Steve Malloy, thank you so much for joining us on 97.1 here in St. Louis.
Well, Ryan, thanks for having me.
Well, I wanted to point out a new report that came out, and it's something that I'm sure you have been following. The United Nations put a report that said, you know, despite all the money we're spending to fight climate change here in the United States, and some European countries also jumping in on this. The report says, well, after all of what we've done, we've basically made no progress. I got to say, I thought we were spending billions and trillions of dollars to try to combat climate change because we were told this is going to make a difference for our kids. Steve, I'm telling you, my kids, we want them to have clean air. We have to make a difference right now. And my grandchildren, my great-great-grandchildren. So what are we doing if it's not making a difference?
Well, so this is my favorite of the annual UN climate reports. It's called the Emissions Gap Report. And it's a report on, you know, how badly countries are missing their, you know, climate goals. And so, you know, the report, as always, this is not new, but it's just, you know, we are 36 years now into climate idiocy, and it just shows that emissions have grown steadily since climate idiocy began in 1988. The report starts in 1990, but, you know, it's all the same. So emissions are just keep going up, and, you know, despite the fact that we have spent trillions of dollars on scaring people, on subsidizing green stuff like windmills and solar panels and EVs and batteries, none of that stuff is making a difference. And then, of course, all the propaganda that has gone into scaring the, you know, bejeebers out of everybody about the planet, you know, being destroyed by emissions, all for naught. Emissions just keep going up. And there is, you know, the UN says that there is no end in sight to emissions going up.
Yeah, and
so, I think, you know, what are we doing?
I was going to say the strategy of telling children you're all going to die when you're older if we don't do this may not have been the right strategy after all.
No. Well, I mean, everyone's going to die when they get old anyway, right? So it's kind of, you know, if that's really their most compelling argument, well, it's kind of a fail. The good news here is that emissions don't really matter, but they don't matter at all. I mean, there's no evidence that emissions are driving warming or any extreme weather or anything like that. It's all, you know, I call it the climate hoax, and it becomes more and more evident every year. But this shows that, you know, even if you believe in this nonsense, we're not even spinning our wheels. You know, the alleged problem is getting worse.
Right. And I've seen different people approach this and try to approach it in a way that's a little bit more logical. And I can't remember which senator it was. It might have been Senator Kennedy, essentially was asking the people that were there to testify on behalf of climate change and has asked them, how much of our atmosphere is made up of CO2? And they're all looking around at each other. Oh, I don't know, 20%. But it's like less than 1%. It's like less than half of 1%. And I think about the way we tried to mitigate changes of emissions. And is that really the right way to handle it? Is it better off for us to try to spend money mitigating you know, tides that are higher, or put seawalls in place, or, you know, look at people that are sitting in floodplains and finding ways to prevent flooding in those areas. That seems to be the better spent use of the money, as opposed to preemptively trying to cut emissions that don't seem to be working.
Yeah, so the amount of carbon dioxide in our atmosphere is actually 0.04%.
Oh, 0.04%, right.
0.04%. And, of course, I challenge, you know, I would love to ask Kamala Harris that question, or Tim Walz, or any climate alarmist, how much carbon dioxide is in the atmosphere, because that would be a lot of fun. They typically don't know. I remember once the Obama EPA administrator and Biden climate czar was asked that question in Congress, and she had no idea. These people have no idea what they're talking about. But, you know, back to your question, I mean, you're absolutely right. You know, we're wasting all this money on climate. You know, in the Inflation Reduction Act, we're scheduled to spend $1 trillion on climate, on wind, solar, EVs, batteries, and other green crap. What we should be doing, you know, if we're going to spend that money, that money needs to go into our infrastructure. We have terrible stormwater management. Our systems are old. They have not been updated. We have terrible wastewater management systems. We have other, you know, real environmental problems like agricultural runoff. These things really do need to be addressed, but there's no money for them. And, of course, the environmentalists who used to worry about these things worry about them no more, because all they, you know, they've thrown all their chips into the climate hoax.
Well, obviously, you're saying that just because you want people to die. I mean, that's like the argument against it, though. And that's what you're combated with when you bring up, okay, let's be pragmatic about this at least, because all these different initiatives, we're throwing money into things that aren't really making a difference. But, if it gives you a warm, fuzzy feeling, that's a whole different thing. And we shouldn't be throwing taxpayer money on warm, fuzzy feelings.
Yeah, these things are actually hurting us. I mean, we are destroying our electricity grid. I mean, we need electricity. Our lives depend on electricity and fossil fuels. And, you know, we are simultaneously destroying our grid with solar and wind and burdening it with EVs and heat pumps and other electrification. And to the point where now, you know, every summer and every winter, you know, we face the threat of blackouts when you need electricity the most, when it's either really cold or really hot. Mm. And so it's actually hurting us. And plus, it's making us poor. You know, we were told that wind and solar were going to make electricity prices cheaper. We were told that EVs are cheaper than conventional and gas powered cars. Those are all lies. None of that is true. Not even close to being true. So we're being put at risk, we're being impoverished, and all for nothing.
Yeah, and, you know, I think what most people want, they just want the truth about it. And if part of the truth is, you know, ultimately, this would be nice if we had renewable energy sources, this is why we should do it. That's not what they're saying. They're basically saying that if you don't do this, your grandkids are going to burn to death because the sun is going to be so hot, and all the rivers are going to dry up, and the crops are going to die, because that's why you have to do this. And again, the science just does not support that. And I think it's important that we at least tell the truth and be pragmatic about how we're spending this money, because we want to be able to use it in the best way possible. I think that would be the logical way, but it's not. But one thing that I think is very telling right now is during this election, they're making it all about abortion, when before, climate change was one of their number one ticketed things on the Democratic side. So why do you think they've started to push this on the back burner? Do you think they have given up on this fight, or do you think it's just not as important to them anymore?
Well, no, it's very important to them. But Kamala Harris can't afford to talk about climate. She can't afford to talk about fracking, because she'll lose Pennsylvania for sure. She'll lose it in a landslide. And her backers don't really care about it. There was a report in the Washington Post not too long ago. The League of Conservation Voters chief said that, oh, we don't mind that, you know, Kamala's not talking about climate, because we know what she's going to do. So, climate is a political loser. It has never helped anyone. Recall President Al Gore. It's just a terrible issue, and it's becoming more terrible because people are seeing that we really do need fossil fuels, and that there really is no connection between fossil fuels and whatever's going on in the atmosphere. So they don't talk about it anymore. But you know, unfortunately, they have not been persuaded by reality yet. They still have the crazy agenda, because the crazy agenda is not about climate; it's about control.
You know, so kind of full circle, not in a way, but they're starting to come back on nuclear energy. And before, if I remember correctly, you know, we're all going to, this waste is going to get into the groundwater because we can't store it properly, and everyone's going to grow a third arm. And, you know, our kids are going to have tails. And they said, this is terrible. You don't want to be around these things. The disaster is waiting to happen, so we need to move away from it. Flash forward to now, and you have Democrats, even in states like Michigan, where I'm at, they're reopening plants that they shut down, and they're doing it with the endorsement of Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, and the governor here is a Democrat also. So do you think possibly they're starting to come back to the idea that, well, maybe they were wrong, and this could wake them up to ideas they might be wrong about now?
Well, so, yeah, big tech is coming around to the realization that, you know, pushing for this green stuff has been a huge mistake, because big tech, you know, with their data centers and our demand for computing, you know, their energy needs are just growing, you know, almost exponentially. And so they really do need steady power that can be ramped up if necessary. And that's going to be fossil fuels and nuclear power. So fossil fuel plants are staying open longer. And big tech has even come to the realization that it needs nuclear power, and they even want to reopen Three Mile Island, which, of course, is, you know, there was a small accident there. No one was hurt. But that started the doom loop for the U.S. nuclear industry. No. And, you know, nuclear power is perfectly safe. I've got some great stuff on Junk Science right at the top about how EPA has been committing radiation, you know, science fraud with radiation risk. People have been unnecessarily scared about it. But, you know, so I'm glad to see big tech coming around to, you know, leaving fossil fuel plants open and, you know, building new nuclear. These are all good things. Unfortunately, you know, they're still stuck in the propaganda. You know, they're doing this stuff very sort of quietly. They're still stuck in the climate doom loop.
Yeah. You mentioned that on your website. So if people wanted to read about that or some of these other things, where can they go?
Well, so go to junkscience.com, and people can follow me on a daily basis on X at junkscience.
Perfect. And if I remember correctly, going back to the Obama administration, I think the Republicans tried to put a plan together. And essentially, I think they called it the nuclear toilet or something like that, where they were going to build it out in the middle of nowhere. So they had a place for the waste to go to, which, by the way, waste is very small that's produced from there.
Yeah.
It's dangerous, but it's small. You know, putting it in a landfill in St. Louis was a bad idea because it's a heavily populated area. You put it in the middle of nowhere where they can now use modern technology to store this waste. Fantastic idea. But I think Obama nixed that because just, you know, 10 years ago, they thought it was they were thinking the same way. I mean, just a decade later where we are now, they're thinking completely different on it.
Yeah. So 30 years ago, the plan was to store spent nuclear fuel in a repository like 100 miles from Las Vegas, a mile underground, in the middle of nowhere, way underground. And EPA regulations were that the waste site had to be secure for 1 million years. totally crazy. Anyway, but so the activists even blocked that because the radiation thing is completely irrational. People are completely nuts about it. I mean, what happened in Missouri was a problem, should not have happened. That's bad government. That's why people need to vote against government. But what, you know, the Las Vegas, the Yucca Mountain site in Las Vegas is perfectly sensible. And as a matter of fact, you know, the site was even being built so that you could, you know, retrieve the waste to reprocess it for nuclear fuel, because as technology gets better, you know, we can get more and more energy out of these things. So, you know, nuclear, you know, unfortunately, green policies have destroyed nuclear research and interest in nuclear. So, you know, nuclear has been very hard to develop. And, you know, now we have these new small modular reactors, and even those are becoming, you know, so expensive. We talk about them, but we're not really seeing any because they're so expensive, made and they're so expensive because of the EPA junk science that goes into radiation risk assessments. So,
yep.
But I have that story. You know, I have a great story at the top of junk science. I encourage everyone, if you're interested in radiation, even if you're scared about radiation, to check it out.
JunkScience.com. Steve Malloy, you can look him up on social media, too, with the junk science. Hey, thank you so much for joining us here today. We really
great
appreciate
talking
it.
With you, Ryan. Thank you.
I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to 97.1 FM Talk. Hey, welcome back. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in. Wow, this weekend is so close. Joining us now is the Director of Municipal Property at the Show Me Institute. They have a new guide out. The first of, I don't know how many parts this will be, a free market guide for Missouri municipalities. David Stokes, welcome to the show.
Ryan, to be honest, we don't know how many parts it's going to be either.
I saw it was part one. And
this is part one. Probably be parts five or six total.
Okay. Well, this is a pretty big guide then. You're doing a lot of work. Kind of walk through this part one, the report, a free market guide for Missouri municipalities.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
Well, the project is going to be about giving people, whether they be city or municipal officials, or city managers, or active citizens, just ways to conduct, to run cities, be they cities, towns, or villages, in a more sort of limited government, free market-oriented way. And to talk about ways to provide alternative service delivery, be it outsourcing to private companies, outright privatization of things like municipal utilities, or one of my favorites, sharing with other governments, usually larger governments, where the larger government can provide the policing or the permitting inspections for your small municipality so that you don't have to do this yourself. And lots of cities in our region do this already, but the whole point of the project is to take the ideas to sort of to combat inertia in the municipalities all around the state of Missouri and in the St. Louis region. And part one is sort of asking the question, how do cities get formed in the first place? How are they formed? Why do some cities have a city manager and others let elected officials run the day-to-day operations, and sort of looking into choices along those lines and analyzing them from the perspective of the good, the bad, and the ugly.
So when so many different places do things differently, and I guess one of the biggest discussions we had maybe 4 years ago was combining the police departments. Instead of having all these different areas having their own police departments, we should just centralize it, do this and do that. So I think people have been on this, the idea of doing it. It faced a vote, a statewide vote, if I remember correctly. And the whole idea that, hey, there's a lot of overlap in government that could be consolidated that would save some money. Is that what this is about? It's just trying to find things to consolidate to save money?
Well, no, it's yes and no. Yes, that's a great example of it. But consolidation isn't always the obvious move. It's not always the right move. Sometimes you can contract out services to the private sector or to other governments, and you can keep your municipal entity but still save taxpayer money and provide better services. Under the question of policing, you know, after a few years after Ferguson, a number of cities and a number of the smaller municipalities in North St. Louis County, they got rid of their police departments and they created the North County Police Cooperative, which I think serves right around 10 municipalities right now in North County. And by everything I've read about it, it's working very well. And it is a way to provide excellent policing with greater economies of scale and greater resources for all these municipalities working into one. you know, throughout the region, there are small cities that contract with St. Louis County to do the police services within their municipality. Other cities like Huntley contracts with Kirkwood or Frontenac for police servicing. There's so many examples like that. So policing is an excellent example, not for outsourcing or privatization, because that is a function that needs to be done by government, but for service sharing with other, usually larger governments. And these are the types of things that the project is really going to get into.
Okay. And that's why you don't know how many parts it'll be, because there's a lot to get into it.
Exactly. I'm going to act like I do. I'm going to say it's going to be five parts in total. It'll be five or six, I think.
With a bonus, perhaps, you can do, right. Yeah, like they
exactly.
do in the movies. So the free market guide for Missouri municipalities, part one, the municipal organization and structure. I want to just look at the way St. Louis is, and I know you can look at this in a broader sense. Is the whole idea like, hey, if we can just find a way for things to get along, everyone's life gets better? Or is that an impossible feat? Do you feel like even after you put recommendations out, you're basically pushing that rock up the hill that's going to keep falling down?
Well, as somebody, you know, the purpose of this is to show how to run municipalities in a more limited government, free market way, to let citizens and neighborhoods and communities sort of grow their own lives and turn their own lives into more successful efforts. So, no, I certainly don't think that just making a few changes in city structure is going to suddenly make everything perfect in the city of St. Louis or anywhere else. I don't believe government has the power, nor should it have the power to do that. But how do you set up cities so that the taxation system is more growth-oriented? And in the city of St. Louis, we don't have a growth-oriented tax system. It's far too dependent on the earnings tax, to give a real and obvious example. That's not good for growth in the city of St. Louis. People might argue with some effect that it's right now there's no other alternative, but that doesn't mean it's good for growth in the long run. So, you know, a place, and we talk plenty about the city of St. Louis in this project, in this report. We talk about a lot of other places, too. But right, I mean, the city has a lot of problems. Its structure is very interesting. It's not all bad. I thought it was great that they reduced the size of the Board of Aldermen a few years back down to 14. I think that's a positive change. I think most people think the mayor, I shouldn't say that. I think that the mayor's office should probably wield a little more power within city government. Is whatever you think about who's ever holding that office, I think they can be too easily stymied by bureaucrats in certain ways in the Department of Personnel and elsewhere. So, yeah, I think we need to make a lot of changes in how the city operates. But my goal is just to talk about ways to set up your city in, again, a more growth-oriented, prosperity-oriented, limited government way to allow people to build their own successful lives, which is, you know, the story of America.
Well, let's just say this, and I'm going to paint a pretty broad brush here. When you have an area that historically has been run by Democrats, saying limited government's not necessarily something they're on board with. So what do you do? Do you basically take this to the people and say, all right, if you want this to happen, it's going to be in your hands. You're going to have to get initiatives together. You're going to get this on the ballot. That's the only way, because you're not going to get the politicians, at least the ones that are sitting here, historically speaking, to get on board with an idea of more limited government.
True, but, and so let's talk about a new committee that the city of St. Louis has. They have a new committee on regulatory reforms in the city. And so far, they've only done a few things, but they've been positive things. So I think my thought, when you have, you know, dealing with St. Louis or Kansas City, places who are generally run by people who believe in a more expansive government, that maybe, sure, they're not going to take the wholesale changes, and I'd love to privatize the water department. They're probably not going to do that. But you can also talk about making smaller incremental change the same way that they just passed a bill to get rid of the limitation on barbershops being open past 6 o'clock, which was a ludicrous regulation that they should have never had. But I give them credit for at least getting rid of it now and realizing that that's a regulatory burden they shouldn't have. Similarly, they simplified the process a few months ago, the same committee and the Board of Aldermen, in getting an alcohol license for your bar or restaurant. I think not everybody was in favor of that, but I think many people agree, and I do, that the old process was overly complicated and overly burdensome. So here's a way that you've got city officials who probably don't agree with the Show Me Institute on a lot, but they're doing some really good work in a few narrow spots in reducing regulations on businesses in the city. So I'd love to focus on that and find other ways to encourage that, work together, maybe being realistic about how far they might want to go, but really focus on the ways to work together and make improvements. Maybe in some places you can make a big change, in others you make some smaller changes, but you're still trying to work together to work in that right direction.
Yeah, you know, I would like to think myself as libertarian tendencies until you say things like, let's privatize the water department, because that scares me. And I'll tell you why, because, you know, they privatized trash pickup in St. Louis and then they don't pick up the trash. What's going to happen when the water doesn't get the job done and you're all of a sudden you turn on your tap and it ain't there and it's a private company? Then you're really in trouble.
Well, except that wouldn't happen. I mean, a couple of years ago, Eureka privatized its water and sewer division in St. Louis County. And it's been they were the last city in St. Louis County to fully operate their own water and sewer system. And they sold that to Missouri American after an open bid process. And that's been great. 20 years ago, Florissant and Webster Groves privatized their water division. So it can be done.
Okay.
And look, if it should be done. And if it were privatized, it would, because it's a monopoly, it would still be heavily regulated by the State Public Service Commission. And look, the city water division, I don't blame the people in the water division, but they have the same problems that every municipal utility has, in which case because the customers are also voters, the elected officials are hesitant to raise rates until it's a disaster and they absolutely have to, like happened a year ago. But they'll go decades without raising rates, which means they don't invest in the system, and then things fall apart and you're playing catch up. So I'm not a fan of municipal utilities in general. And again, everybody in St. Louis County is served by private utilities. It's one of the largest parts of the country where everything is private, gas, electric, and water. And in St. Louis City, the electric and the gas are privately provided and nobody, you know, flips the light and the electricity doesn't come on. So that's how it would work with the water. But yeah, that's a big one. And I'm also perfectly happy to focus on smaller incremental steps in getting these changes as we see around the region.
Which, by the way, if people wanted to look up the report, at least part one, and maybe want to learn more about some of the future ones as they come out, where can they go?
Go to showmeinstitute.org, right on the main page there. Again, the first one's about structure and organization, a lot about the questions of city managers and city administrators, or not having anything at all, like how Florissant is one of the largest suburbs that doesn't have a city manager. St. Louis City, of course, doesn't have a city manager either, as compared to Kansas City, which does. So it gets in a lot of those questions. It talks a lot about the costs and the benefits of fragmentation in our region, particularly in St. Louis County. And oftentimes we talk about the costs and the harms of that, and there are those definitely, but there's also benefits to it. And it really gets into that whole idea and then talks about, you know, why did people form cities in the first place? And and you can be like Wildwood, who incorporated a municipality about 30 years ago because they wanted more control of land and more control of development in the region. Or you can be like the city of Pierrepont near Columbia, which incorporated about 15 years ago because they didn't want more regulations. They didn't want more land control. And they feared Columbia was going to annex them and do that. So they incorporated so that they wouldn't have those things. So, you know, different strokes for different folks, as people say. And that's that rhymes nicely with my last name. So I've always liked that saying. And that's just sort of what the paper's about.
So that would be your book title?
Sure. Different strokes for different municipal strokes for different city folks. Sure. We'll go with that. I love it. You get royalty for helping me come up with it.
Well, how about this? Just say, and thanks to Ryan Recker for help on the title. That would be nice. But it does really work. And I am a sucker for things that rhyme. That seems to really grab my attention. And there's a lot of problems that need to be fixed. Is it possible to fix these problems? I mean, I'm going to go back and say, hey, let's just be realistic here. Is it even possible to fix some of the things that you're proposing, or is it such a tall task that there's no person up for the job to do it?
I think it's possible, and I correct me if I'm wrong, I assume you're sort of referring to the city of St. Louis more specifically here, which is definitely struggling right now. But it is possible to address these problems. And I think citizens and communities have to do a lot of this themselves as neighborhoods and residents and people investing in their own community. Look at some of the neighborhoods like Soulard and Lafayette Square that over the decade and all around the city that over the decades have revitalized themselves. But you want to talk about an opportunity for optimism. Look at the city of Detroit, which, you know, hit rock bottom a decade ago with a state takeover and a bankruptcy filing. And will those things be necessary for the city of St. Louis? I hope not. I don't necessarily think they will be. But, you know, sometimes you have to hit bottom. And then you can, like Detroit, really start a turnaround as people start investing in the city and moving into the city. So, yeah, if Detroit can turn it around, and they were in far worse shape, I believe, than the city of St. Louis is, then anything can happen. So there's absolutely a chance, a reason for optimism. And I think improving how government does things is one of the ways to help accomplish that.
Here's what I'll find, and I'll say this. And, you know, I lived in St. Louis for a while until I moved here to Detroit. So they still ask me to do fill-in shows remotely, which is, you know, a true honor that I get to still connect with the audience that way. But you hear the stories about Detroit being a comeback city and all these other things that they say about it. But what you realize is when you get down to the street level, you realize there's a lot of cosmetics on it to give it that phrase. And there's a lot of people that don't see it or feel it. And there's still a lot of problems with the bankruptcy and what has come from it. All these people were promised things. Police officer pensions is a good example that they're not going to get. And the bankruptcy took a lot away from people. They gave a lot of money to people that already had a lot of money, like the Gilberts continuing to grow. So I'm going to compare that to St. Louis. There's a lot of people that will be cheerleaders for St. Louis. But when you get back down to the streets, you realize it's business owners that are tired of bricks going through their windows, their patrons getting their cars broken into, and people not wanting to come down because they don't feel safe. And you can talk about the comeback. You can talk about all the other good things. But man, when you get down to the street level and you talk to the people that are actually living it, they're just not happy. They got to consolidate part of the cheerleading side of it with the reality, I think. And it's got to be like that with a lot of cities.
Right. And, you know, I know we're not here to talk Detroit specifically, although as a Detroit Lions fan, I'll talk Detroit all day. But there's problems Detroit had that St. Louis just doesn't have. And the main one is the enormity of the city, where they just got to the point where it was so large and with so few people living, they had to practically cut off services to the outer parts of the city. A, they didn't have the money, and B, it was just logistically impossible. So that was a fact that St. Louis City won't have. And St. Louis City, I think, I'm not trying to encourage some sort of consolidation or merger or anything like that, but ways for St. Louis City to operate alongside and work with St. Louis County and other parts of the region, I think those are excellent. And then one small example would be the police helicopter service, where the county and the city and St. Charles share the police helicopter unit, so they don't have to all fund their own one. That's just one of many examples for opportunities for cost savings and taxpayer efficiencies that can help everybody out.
Awesome. All right. Again, if people wanted to read the guide or at least the start of it and then know where to go for the other ones when they come out, where do they go?
ShowMeInstitute.org, and people can follow me on Twitter at David C. Stokes, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk about it on the show. I always enjoy listening to you all, and hope the listeners check it out.
David Stokes, Show Me Institute. Go check out the guide. First one's up of possibly 5 or 6, or you know what? They may feel froggy. 7 or 8. You never know. They can keep finding more ways to help.
Get big.
Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Always enjoy it, sir. Thanks.
All right. We got the cut of the day and the weekend coming up. Really excited for that. I'm Ryan Recker filling in for Mark Reardon on 97.1. Welcome back. I'm Ryan Recker filling in. Wow, it's almost the weekend, Sue. I cannot wait for this. And I have a fantastic cut of the day.
Looking forward to this one. Good. What is it?
All right. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
So this is J.D. Vance as part of his News Nation town hall that he did.
Hmm.
I don't know if you got a chance to hear it or see any clips from it, but this is really good. This is J.D. Vance's advice to America, and this is generally fantastic advice. I think this deserves more airplay than it's getting. Let's take a listen.
Don't get too personal all the time, but you know, one of the things I've seen, especially from, you know, some of my wife's friends and some of my friends, is that they disagree with us on politics sometimes. They'll get very personal about it. And if you're discarding a lifelong friendship because somebody votes for the other team, then you've made a terrible, terrible mistake and you should do something different. Like, don't cast aside. Like, most of my family, obviously, is going to vote for, you know, Donald Trump and J.D. Vance. And if they're not, actually, I need to talk to them. But I've got friends who like me personally, acquaintances who aren't necessarily going to vote for me. That doesn't make them bad people. And we can't. This is my most important advice. Whether you vote for me, whether you vote for Donald Trump, whether you vote for Kamala Harris, don't cast aside family members and lifelong friendships. Politics is not worth it. And I think if we follow that principle, we'll heal the divide in this country.
Wow. That's fantastic advice. What do you think, Sue?
Well, of course, to me, that's common sense. But I guess that's just not how it is anymore.
I know. It seems pretty right. But I mean, people get cut off. You know, it's sometimes you're like, oh, I haven't heard from so-and-so. Oh, they're not friends on Facebook anymore. And you know the reason for it. And you hear the way people talk sometimes. And I hear it all the time at work. You hear the way people talk and the things that they discuss. And you realize very quickly that they cut people out of their lives. And it scares me in some way because you don't want to lie in order to keep friendships. But at the same time, it's not you. It's not you're not the one that's cutting things off. You can't control what other people do, I guess.
Well, you don't have to talk about politics, right? You could just have a relationship without discussing politics ad nauseum, right? Just to avoid the topic and it would be fine.
Right. But they're being told that the person running is Hitler. So they have to make it personal because otherwise we're going to have Hitler in office. So they take it personal because of that. You know, there's another clip, and I didn't get a chance to do this, but I'm going to play this. It's a little bit longer, and I think I got time. I don't think this is an ad for Donald Trump, but I did see a lot of endorsements for him in it. It was a Holocaust survivor talking and discussing how hurtful it is for him to hear someone to be compared to Adolf Hitler when obviously that is not the case.
Adolf Hitler invaded Poland when I was 9 years old. He murdered my parents and most of our family. I know more about Hitler than Kamala will ever know in 1,000 lifetimes. For her to accuse President Trump of being like Hitler is the worst thing I've ever heard in my 75 years living in the United States. I know President Trump, and he would never say this, and Kamala Harris knows it. This. She owns my parents and everybody else who was murdered by Hitler an apology for repeating this lie.
Why should the Jewish people support President Trump?
Yes, why should the Jewish
because
people?
Because he's a mensch. I believe that President Trump is definitely going to be good for Israel because in everything that he's done up to now was in favor. He never double-crossed anyone and he never showed any weakness. Watching President Trump pray for the hostages at the Ohel and getting to spend time with him so meaningful. He has always stood with the Jewish people and the state of Israel.
I think that's very true when it comes to the relationship between, I guess, Donald Trump's administration versus, you know, what Kamala Harris has indicated. Now, there's a recent interest in the Jewish vote for Kamala Harris. And she's like, oh, look, I married a Jew, my husband, you know, and it's like, okay, this is so phony. You're only doing this for votes. And then you go out and then you start making Hitler comparisons, which are obviously very hurtful to Jews.
I had not heard that before, Ryan. That was really great.
It's touching, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
But it's not just Holocaust survivors that are it's remarkable that we still have those among us living today that you can go talk to, living history.
Yes.
But it's also just, in general, Jewish people who just talk about how disrespectful and degrading it is to try to compare anyone to Adolf Hitler after what that person did to their people.
Yes.
It's something that you shouldn't take lightly, especially when it's used to score political points, and it's obviously not true, and they're using it as a way to try to degrade someone. And a lot of people disagree with that statement to begin with, but still, I think it's a point that needs to be made, and I thought it was a very powerful message from a Holocaust survivor. All right, well, that'll do it for us as we get close to this. Wow, I can't believe how close we are to the election. If you want to look me up online, at Ryan Recker, Ryan Recker Radio, Twitter, Facebook, all the usual places where you normally find that. I hope you have a great weekend. Safe ride home. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon at 97.1 FM.
Get more at 97.1talk.com. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.